Now that you've completed the workbook exercises, it's time to get to the nitty-gritty. The five tough questions. I know, you're asking yourself, hey, what have we just been doing? Weren't those questions tough? But these are the five very difficult questions you need to ask yourself to see just how dark your feelings about your relationship are and just how negatively you think of yourself and your partner. Have the courage to be honest here, even if it's scary to admit certain things through your answers. The only thing worse than having a relationship in trouble is to have a relationship in trouble and be in denial about it. Again, let me remind you, do not show your answers to your partner. We tend to overemphasize negative feelings when we're disappointed and forget to emphasize the positive. But for right now, get out your journal and let it all hang out. Question 1. At least one definition of love is feeling that the security and well-being of your partner matters as much to you as your own security and well-being. Given that, do you behave in a way that reflects that you are in love with your partner? Why or why not? Question 2. Using that same definition, is your partner in love with you? Why or why not? Question 3. Knowing what you now know about your relationship, would you still get involved with the same person if you had to do it all over again? Why? Question 4. When comparing yourself to other people in relationships, do you feel that you have been cheated or settled too cheap? Why? And question 5. If you could break off your relationship or get a divorce from your partner right now, without any inconvenience, legal cost, or embarrassment, without any undue hardship on your children, if you have any, would you do it? Why? I know that dealing with these issues is about as much fun as getting a root canal, but having done it, you have taken an important step in getting your relationship out of the ditch. By getting real about your relationship, yourself, and your partner, you have identified some dangerous and powerfully destructive forces in your life that you must now contend with. Now you can marshal your resources and get up for it. Delusion is no solution. I suspect that you have never been as brutally honest about yourself, your feelings, and your relationship as you are being right now. As a result, I strongly suspect that you may be meeting yourself, and thus your partner's partner, for the first time ever. You could be having mixed emotions right now, but please don't get down on yourself here. If you have emerged from these tests thinking, "Whoa, my relationship is far, far worse than I thought," just hold on and keep listening. As I told you at the very start of this audiobook, you have been given so much misinformation about relationships that it's amazing that you have maintained any kind of relationship at all. We're about to identify all of those myths so you can root them out of your life. Right now, I'm willing to bet that you're convinced that you and your partner should be following certain rules or meeting certain standards in your relationship. You've been told over and over all the attributes that make up a happy couple. You've been bombarded with romanticized images of what it means to be truly in love. You've been led to believe that you and your partner should be a perfectly intertwined unit, floating through life in glorious harmony and bliss. I'm sorry to say it, but I believe that you and your relationship have been getting jerked around in the worst possible way. It's time to blow the whistle on this fraud. I'm about to share with you 10 of the most dangerous relationship myths that are commonly taught, believed, and practiced. When you hear them, your initial reaction might be to wonder if I've gone nuts. Some of these myths have been part of your mindset for so long that you might have difficulty even contemplating the idea that they are false. All I can say is that your tendency to hold on to these beliefs just because they're familiar will result in your continual delusion. I classify these long-held beliefs as myths because they simply do not work. Based on results, these myths don't have one whit to do with whether your relationship is successful. Unfortunately, based on those same results, these myths have everything to do with making your relationship unsuccessful. Do these myths help couples build and sustain happy, healthy, lasting relationships? The answer is not only no, but hell no. So now is the time to get the myths out of your head and out of your plans so that you can be open to focusing on what really does matter in a relationship. Myth number one, a great relationship depends on a great meeting of the minds. I have rarely encountered a couple in distress who didn't think that the answer to their problems was at least in part that they should be more alike, that they should see things through one another's eyes. Oh yes, empathy. Becoming more like your partner. The pablum cure-all. Sounds logical, doesn't it? Sounds pretty darn lofty and unselfish, right? The problem is, it's a crock. You're not ever going to see things through your partner's eyes. You will rarely understand and appreciate how and why your partner views the world in his or her particular way. The reason you won't be able to do it is because you're so totally different from your partner. You are genetically, physiologically, psychologically, and historically different. You have been conditioned differently by the world. You have different learning histories. You have different priorities, and you value different things in different ways. And you know what? That's okay. Different is okay. If you are now thinking that I must be some reactionary old coot who has no sympathy for the evolution of women's and men's roles in society, think again. I think it's great that women can have powerful careers and that men can stay home changing diapers. But I take issue with those who think a man's and a woman's psychological makeup can be interchanged. As one who accepts that there is a master plan that has been orchestrated by a higher power from the beginning of time, I am a strong believer that we are wired up differently and we are wired up that way for a reason. In the original plan, there was a division of labor in which men were expected to perform certain jobs that did not lend themselves well to emotionality or sensitivity. In this division of labor, women dealt with responsibilities in which sensitivity and discernment were more essential than was brute strength. Men are not as sensitive and emotional as women are because they are not supposed to be. To try to force these traits and characteristics into the personality of a man is foolhardy. What's more, if you're a woman and you're trying to shoehorn yourself into a man's point of view, you're spinning your wheels. It is not natural for me to see a situation through my wife's eyes any more than it is natural for her to see it through my eyes. Furthermore, it wouldn't help our relationship if we could. We are different, and that is that. And we need to live with it because it isn't going to change. Obviously, a lot of people don't get this, and that includes many of the therapists offering couples therapy. These folks maybe just haven't been down near enough different roads of life and have no clue about real-world relationships. Make no mistake, these therapists understand the psychology of sex differences. They all have had instruction about the magnitude of the disparities, but they seem to forget about those fundamental differences when they start trying to heal broken relationships and have the avant-garde millennium mindset. The problem is, the more we attempt to blur roles into a unisex world, the more we are spinning out of control and trying to fix what ain't broke. This kind of wrong thinking is so dangerous because myth-based advice given to an unsuspecting couple can truly paralyze any constructive actions they might otherwise be making. Dangerous because there is not one chance in a million that either party is going to be able to do it. It doesn't work because of something called instinctual drift. Instinctual drift is the tendency for all organisms, when under pressure, to resort to and exhibit their natural tendencies. It is even true with animals. I never cease to be amazed when I'm watching CNN and hear the shock and dismay of some reporter and some forlorn victims who have been attacked by a wild animal that they have tamed and raised as a pet. The announcer typically says something like, "A shocking story from Sheboygan today. Authorities offered no explanation for the unprovoked attack by this savage animal that turned on its master." Every time I hear that, I shake my head and think, are you people morons? You take a wild animal that has for centuries survived as a predator, artificially modify its behavior, and then are shocked when the animal reverts to its genetic programming and has his master for lunch? The animal isn't being savage. It's just being who and what it is. It is doing what is natural for it to do. We humans may be smarter, or not, but we operate much the same. We will talk later about how we can meet our partners where they are naturally in their hearts and minds. We will also talk about accepting our differences rather than making them sources of conflict. As I hope to show you later, a relationship is far more enjoyable when you're with someone who enriches your life, not simply reflects it. I believe that before this journey is over, you will become thankful for the differences that may now be sources of great frustration.